Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and thank you. This is a Facebook hookup. They still have not allowed me to change my password, but I've got some texts. One that's handling the Lynn Stewart website, Ian, is going to be working on it. And hopefully by next week, we will have our old call-in numbers back. But in the meantime, I know you understand that we're in trouble here because the beast is in trouble and is in pain and is thrashing about. And in colonialism, when they say, is we sick, Massa? Yes, we sick until we get rid of Massa. So colonialism equals genocide. We know that. Homelessness equals death. We know that. Gentrification equals ethnic cleansing. We definitely know that. And Gaza is all of the above. And if you are paying attention this week, you know what I mean. If you missed something, we've got some people who were on it. They went to the demonstrations. We've got an expert who's been sending out the articles. I'm referring to the Jericho website. But in the meantime, let me see if I can get this technology going here.
I'm very happy to be here. But I'm sad to be here under these circumstances. Now, we are talking today about upping the resistance to oppression. And it must be understood, as everyone has been telling you, learn to read your world. The chairman has been interpreting your world. The facts have been brought out in every way. And we should have a revolutionary movement underway here. But we do not, as has been explained. So let me try one more time to get into where we are and how easy it is to understand. The first thing you must understand is no one volunteered for slavery. There was no volunteer slavery movement. We became captured and were put into slavery by all the terroristic, all the violent means, and some of the violent means that we haven't found out about yet, available. They were used against us to enslave us for their benefit. Now keep that in mind. This is where it began. We enslave you for our benefit. And the next question is, what are we going to do? Well, at this moment, we're talking about upping the resistance that has flagged. And it has flagged because of a mental condition on our part.
Right on.
We can look at the history that's been presented. I remember one of the first books that I read to get me into the details of this slavery was Aptaker Books, The History of the Negro People, written in the 30s, or late 20s and 30s, two volumes, and it outlined slave rebellions, resistance to slavery. It gave you numbers, it gave you places, and it had showed that not only was slavery a volunteer institution, slavery was resisted violently and constantly. And now I'm going to skip back to this present moment we have before going back to the history.
Not a volunteer.
Okay, so you recognize that was our brother. He said, made a little faux pas there. He meant resistance to slavery. And I think most of you can understand what made me select that tape tonight. If you look at Gaza, when you resist colonialism, when you resist slavery, when you resist oppression, they make you pay a high price. And what I am looking at in America is I am so proud of the people on the campuses, and I'm so proud of the community that stood outside the gates to support the people on the campuses. And I am so proud of the people who have been standing up and saying, not in my name. So without further ado, I want to recognize another family that stood up and said, not in my name. I do believe the MOVE people are in the house, but before we go to them, we always start our program, our way of saying our prayers is to say it with liberation poetry. And our professor is a bit under the weather, but it didn't stop him. He's here to be with us tonight. So Africa family, just hang in there. You're next. Professor Louis, your mic is open. Thank you for coming on board, even though you don't feel well. And thanks to all of you comrades for hanging in there with me. Thank you, thank you. Professor Louis, your mic is open.
Trouble is as close as that siren you hear outside. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Serious trouble that can double in an instant. It's not something distant. Cop car, fire engine, ambulance followed by silence, guns, knives, fire, heart attack, stroke happens if you're rich or broke. What can you say? We've been taught to look away. It's not our business when other people suffer. We have made a buffer between us and them across the world. It's a common problem. And it's the same with tragedies in far-off places. Can there possibly be spaces in our response? What if it happened in the Bronx? 200,000 dead from the tsunami. Don't bother me. I got my own problems. Would it help me solve them? So it's nothing new. The siren blows for you. And that newscaster on TV coming up on tragedy reports it factually. No expression except maybe fake concern, and when will we learn the newscaster gets paid every day to say what they say, and they're all actors anyway, so don't ask for who the siren blows, for who the ambulance goes, no time to pose in your fancy clothes, through and through, it blew for you, and when you hear disaster call, that siren blows for us all. And how far away are you gonna go? Can your mind be so slow as to blame the guy who's bothering you on the street because he wants something to eat? Or will you think about why he's homeless, why he got to make do with less and less, and why in one of the richest cities in the world is there even one boy or girl without a home, and the government can't even throw them a bone like a place to live, and government has got to confess there are millions of families homeless, with no home to call their own. And who do you blame for the pain? Is it the same to blame the guy on the street with nothing to eat or the ones who put him there? Who is it that didn't dare to care? Who didn't want to share? And we know the guy is crazy, but I defy anyone who isn't lazy to stay one weekend on the street and not go crazy. No one to trust, no one who won't bust you, combust you. And who set the homeless guy on fire, watched the flames get higher, and thought it was a joke? After all, we knew the guy was dead broke. And did you ever fear you can hear in your ear that you might be without a home, can't get a loan, eating a bone from the trash with zero cash and no hope of getting some, no hope of ever sitting in the sun or having fun? And so you better not cry when you pass them by. Better to curse the people on top, the ones who forgot the people on the bottom, those who are forgotten, and let everyone you meet that although there may be no quick fix for the situation on the street, it doesn't feel that way for those on the street or for the people with nothing to eat. And it is policy that put them there. Policy of I don't care and I don't want to share. Policy that builds zero subsidized housing. Policy that builds no Mitchell Lama co-ops that right now today have been already stopped, even though these co-ops are paid for by the tenants with their own finance. And some people work full-time at minimum wage, can't get out of the cage as they age, and have got to pay one-half their money on rent. Is it heaven sent? Is it meant to send a message to the landlord and real estate that it's okay, no matter what people say, to treat some of us as less than human? It's okay because business is booming. And in the final end, who profits from there being people so low, down below, people without a home, people who cannot get a loan no matter how hard they try? It's not you and I who profit from the lost souls. It's worse than cold to think that way, and it's not right anyway, no matter what you say. So we should pay attention to the when and where, and thinking about instead about who put them there. And now that wherever you go, you think you know that the whistle blows for you, what are you going to do? Will you continue to do nothing, not one single thing about it? Or are you going to shout it from the top of the roof, go and get uncouth about it? When you hear that siren wail, will you do something for the people locked in jail? When you hear that horn blow, will you do something for everyone you know who's on the bottom so at least they know they're not forgotten? And how is it that you don't know, fast or slow, that there has got to be something better for the children? And if there's something better for them, as plain as could be, that there is something better for you and for me.
Well, thank you. It's a chronicle of our day in poetry. Thank you very much. I just got a text from Sister Julia. She's having difficulty getting in. Hopefully I can correct it by next week. And yes, there will be a next week. Now we've got to go to our special guest, and we thank you again, Professor Louis, for hanging in there, even though you are not well. And am I correct? Is the Africa tribe in the house?
Honorable Sister Betty, how you doing, Cass?
All right, we got the Africans here. Your mic is open, and you did it, and the movement did it. You got out, and you're still living to talk about it. So the mic is yours, and I don't think it's a celebratory date, but it is an important date for those of us who believe in resistance. And congratulations on your Zoom seminar last night. It was awesome. Enlighten
us.
Thank you.
Can you check and see? Ramona is trying to get in.
Okay, I think I see. I'm going to see. All right, is this Ramona?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I didn't recognize that number. Okie dokie. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Sister Betty.
Now, we are so happy to hear your voice on the outside, still sounding strong. Take it away, guys.
Okay, this is Ramona Africa, Minister of Communication for the MOVE organization, sole adult survivor of the May 13th, 1985 bombing and murder of MOVE. That's men, women, and children. You know, they talk about what's happening in the Middle East right now, how, you know, babies are being killed, but that happened here in the United States with MOVE. You know, they killed our children, and it was a deliberate thing. It was not a mistake or things getting out of control. It was deliberate, and they definitely wanted to kill our children because they knew our schedule. We took our children over to Copps Creek Park regularly, almost every day. We took them to 9th Street, the Italian market, when we went there. We had a couple of houses with dogs in them, and we went over, you know, each one to feed them. Sometimes women or adults alone, you know. So if they wanted to take us into custody or take our children out of harm's way, they had every opportunity to do that. So we know it was deliberate murder. Also, I want to point out that on May 13th, there was a cop in the second floor window of a house across the street from us. You know, they evacuated the block. But this one house, the cops took custody of, and they were on the second floor and had a video tape, and they were taping what was happening to our house and to us. And one of the cops was heard saying, "That's the last time they'll call the mayor MS." And this is while the fire was ablaze, and they could see that because they were videotaping it. And this is the attitude that we're talking about, how this government, these officials, you know, were determined to eradicate MOVE, you know, eradicate this family. And they wanted to do that because John Africa is the master strategist. He taught us not to just go against, you know, one aspect or a couple of aspects of this system. He taught us that if you want to make things right, you know, and you want to make life secure, you have to bring down the whole system. And that's
right on.
What MOVE that's what MOVE has been doing for like 50 some years, you know, and we won't stop. And that's why this government, its officials, are determined to stop MOVE. They tried it on August 8th of 78, and that was a big failure for them because every MOVE person in that house came out, you know, alive. And the officials were, oh, my God, they were angry and messed up about that. So when they came in 85, they came with the bomb because they were determined to do what they failed to do in 78. They realized that, you know, guns and weapons wasn't going to get it. I mean, they shot thousands of rounds of bullets in on us on Osage Avenue, and that didn't, you know, work or move. The police commissioner was speaking on a bullhorn talking about, you know, we had several minutes to come out, and none of us would come out because why would we turn ourselves over to the people that was trying to kill us, you know? So we would not do that. That is why, that is not why, I'm not saying that's why, but that's when they dropped a bomb on our house, you know, on men, women, children, and animals that we had in there. So this was their tactics to try to eradicate MOVE. You know, our children went over to the park virtually every day. And there were cops that surveilled us, that was watching us, knew our schedule as well as we did. So if they wanted to remove our children from harm's way, they had every opportunity to do that. But they weren't interested in doing that. In fact, the police commissioner, after the bombing, he said that he considered our children as much, if not more, of a threat as the adults, because he knew how strong our children were, you know, and how this system had not corrupted them.
Well, my response to that is, if you look at the Black misleadership class, they know when a captive is resistant, and they know when somebody loves their master. They've got it down to a science because they created these other creatures. And so we salute you. We salute your stamina. We salute your integrity that you came out on your terms. And we thank you. I hear some more MOVE people there. Do you want to say something else, please?
Well, anybody else? This is Janine. This is Janine Africa. One of the MOVE Nine did 41 years in prison for a crime I didn't commit. And I just want to say that May 13th, they came out with guns, bombs, everything they had to stop John Africa, and they failed. But we want people to realize that they have not stopped trying to attack MOVE, trying to stop teaching the John Africa. Anybody that knows about COINTELPRO, then you know what I'm talking about. They are still using different measures to try to break up this organization, stop this organization's influence, because John Africa gave people an example of hope in the MOVE organization. And they see how strong we are and how John Africa influences people to see that they got the strength to fight. They don't have to accept the crimes, the cruelties of this system. And that's why they hate John Africa so much and hate MOVE, because they don't want people to have an example. They don't want John Africa to influence people to be strong and to fight. And so they are still trying to discourage people from following MOVE's example by trying to say that MOVE is criminal, MOVE is wrong. But our example speaks for itself. And we're saying people look at the example and not listen to the lies of this system. And that they can't come at us like they did in 78 and 85 anymore, because they know the world is watching and the world knows how corrupt and bloodthirsty they are. So they are trying other, going to subterfuge to try to stop this organization. But we are saying, just like they couldn't stop us in 78 and 85 with their guns and bombs, they will not be able to stop John Africa with their lives. On the move.
On the move.
I just want to add to that, too. You know, what people may not know, but what the government has been watching and knows, John Africa was in federal court. They put all kinds of charges on John Africa. But he went into federal court, not paying any attention to these officials. He slept through most of the trial, you know, got on the floor in the back of the courtroom doing, I don't know how many push-ups, countless push-ups, and he did not defend himself with legality. He used his belief, you know, his teaching to defend himself. And what John Africa did, he was acquitted of every single messed up charge, you know, that they put on him. He was facing 150 years in prison. But they could not keep John Africa in prison. They could not put him in prison because when he spoke his belief, you know, the jury heard that. They understood what he was saying. And that's how they could, you know, juror, you know, deliberate and come out saying not guilty.
I understand perfectly. And this is why we started off the program by saying, having Ralph Pointer remind us about resistance, you really don't have a choice. If you look at Gaza, that's the Europeans are making it clear. There is no place to go. You've got to turn and face it and fight back. And it's also clear that when you do fight back, they're going to escalate it. They're going to go to the bombs. And that's what we're looking at in Rafah. We're going to get a report from Sister Anne and a few others in a minute, but I want to thank the MOVE family for honoring us by getting on and by keeping the memory of Comrade Ralph Pointer relevant by joining his voice with yours. I really thank you so very much. Did you have any other words?
Thank you, Mr. Bennett, because there's not too many people that, you know, will have MOVE, talk about MOVE, and hear about MOVE from MOVE.
Well, I apologize for getting on late last night, but when I got on, it was wonderful to see everybody's faces. They were just beaming. It was a real fellowship, and that's what the movement gives you. You won't get rich, but you'll meet some of the finest comrades in the world, and it's an honor to be on this program with you. Thank you. Any last words?
Yes, on the move, Sister Betty. This is Janet. I wanted to let people know how the example of John Africa does not just affect MOVE people. It affects all of life. That example about the federal trial that Mona was just telling you about, everybody that's followed any court case with this government, they know that when the feds go out to get you, they always get their man. They had trumped up charges against John Africa that would have took prison for 150 years. A black man with a third grade education, not using the system's reference to fight this system, but using John Africa's reference of life, reference of God against this system, stood up against the lawyers, stood up against the legal system, the judge, and won that case, walked out of that federal trial a free man. I want people to understand how a monumental thing that is, because nobody beats this federal government. Nobody does that. But John Africa, not only did John Africa beat the system, he brought our brother Mo Africa out with him, innocent, against all those charges. And another example I want to point out to people is that all the years that John Astor has influenced MOVE, and we have been representing this organization, representing John Astor, John Astor gave people of Philadelphia and all over this world an insurance policy because of the stand that we took against this system. They were brought down after August 8th and May 13th because of all the disaster, the corruption, the viciousness that they spit on MOVE. And they, people saw how ugly and violent it was. And everybody around this country and other countries was coming at this government, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I mean, they made them look like idiots. They made them look like fools for murdering 11 of our family members and 5 of them children and our animals, sending MOVE people to prison for 41 years for a crime they know we didn't commit. But because they got exposed for doing this, now people can take a position. They can protest. They can demonstrate. But because of example that John Astor put on this system dare not come back with the same example that they do with us. They won't drop no bomb. They won't put people in jail for 41 years because of the example of John Astor. And that is what MOVE is saying is an insurance policy to everybody that stands up and fight against this system, because you can win. We are the people. We represent. And people need to stand up, like you said, and fight, because you might as well, because this system is going to raise hell on you, so you might as well fight.
Exactly.
Long live Donna.
Long live MOVE. On the MOVE. We want to thank you, thank you, thank you. And without further ado, we want to go to Comrade Cieto. He also has had some health issues. We want to open up his mind before we go to Comrade Sister Ann Lamb.
Yes. I want to first salute the Africa family for all they have not only endured, but through practice has laid out roadmaps on what we need to do to take up this fight. You know, we see a burgeoning bubble of the so-called immigrants coming into the country today is the fault of colonialism across the globe. Everything that we see going on today is the fault of the United States government, the UK, and France. And what I mean by that, when you've stolen everybody's resources and you've made everyone destitute and you blame them for a condition because the condition that you created, this is an outcome. It's an eyesore to them because they are embarrassed, but too, that they are now having to pay for their discretions or indiscretions. This is what's going on with the world.
Right on.
To get rid of, through genocide, any and everybody that would say no to colonialism. Tell the U.S. to get out of the country. Tell the U.S. to get out of Niger. Tell the U.S. to get out of everywhere because of the indiscretions. But then how do you then justify, like the comrade sister just mentioned, they justify, they make a law and create laws that fail on Comrade Africa, who was facing 140 years. And now we have Chairman Omali Yeshitela, who's facing on the 3rd of September, going to these same federal institutions, federal courts. We have murders at high rates going on. This is genocide throughout of the colonial industrial complex called prison. Now we have our children. These are our futures. These are the ones that we need to pull out of these institutions that say that they teach higher learning, but they're actually dumbing down as they've been doing, just like the churches, just like these other institutions who have kept us dumbfounded. And then we have chosen leadership that gets up and perpetrates that they stand as leaders on our behalf. These are about the petty bourgeois neo-colonizers. talking about these same individuals that stand up and tell you and me we're better off today than we've ever been. We've never seen worse conditions. We've never seen such degradation. We've never seen such a heinous crime being committed unless we look at the military-industrial complex of the United States. They're all over the world. They're now being told that they're now being put out. Now they want to go to war. We must prepare because right now we are at war. We are in war and must form the much necessary collective, or do we continue down the rabbit hole where our children, their children, all African future generations make these perpetual blunders that we made? We made because we wanted to fall in line. We wanted to be like. We wanted to be with them. We wanted to be a part of a system that hates us. This system does not love you nor me nor our children. They show it every day. They show it through the CPS. They steal our children, kidnap our children, our little bitty children. They rape and they fundle our children. We should be firecracker hot. We shouldn't be bewildered. We should take a stand right now. If we don't take for ourselves, nobody will do for us what we need to do for ourselves. So I'm asking everybody, tomorrow, go to handsoffwahoo.org, and tomorrow there will be an address to the African nation by Chairman Omalia Sitela, who will be speaking. A Dying Colonialism Lasts Out at Home and Abroad. It'll be Wednesday, May 15, 2024, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be live. You can watch this on YouTube, but go to handsoffwahoo.org and get this information. But we must become, and I'll say this in my final statement, that if we don't begin to work as a collective, if we begin to think that my organization is better than your organization, keep going down the rabbit hole that I have all the answers. If we don't study the roadmaps that were laid out by Malcolm, if we don't study the roadmaps that have been laid out by Marcus Garvey, if we don't study the roadmaps that have been laid out by the Africa family, if we don't study the roadmaps that have been laid out by Chairman Omalia Sitela, and we keep on trying to make sure, we will be another 100 years if we live to see that time come. I say this, and I'm calling this out in earnest because we are in dire straits, and this is no joke. We're in murderous times. We're in times where starvation is reality. They're closing down now all of the installations where they said that the migrants could go to. They call them migrants, but these are human beings who've been run out of their countries again by the colonialistic governments and by the theft of all of their resources. This is what's happened. That's what we got over here. Don't blame them. Blame the United States government. I'll say that and I'll say Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru. Freedom. Freedom now. Thank you. We've got to move right along, and we thank Brother Sayeto, because like Professor Louis, a bit under the weather, but a real soldier. And so we're going to go to some of the people who were in the street saying not in our name, but they also represent one of the best political prisoner websites in the country. Sister Ann Lam, your mic is open, and I thank you for all the reports on Gaza and Palestine and the links to all the different news reporters. No, to be a news reporter in Gaza is a sentence of death. To be a poet in Gaza is a sentence of death. So I thank you for keeping their voices alive. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Betty. Always an honor and a privilege. Amazing to hear all my Mule family speaking there. Very inspiring folk, as always. And I love them. And you know, they do set a great example for all of us. I speak about another soldier that's not doing well, which is our dear comrade, Brother Leonard Peltier. As people may know, I'm sure most people who listen to this program do know, but we will say it anyway, Leonard has been in prison for 48 years for a crime that he did not commit and which this government knows he did not commit. And the last parole hearing he had was in 2009, and he got a 15-year hit. So he's going to the parole board on June 10th of 2024. And his ad hoc committee has asked people several things, which is, we appreciate everyone's support, but we have a couple of requests. Please do not go to Coleman. Having a group of people converge on a prison could cause them to postpone the hearing, right? We know this. Please do not call the prison or the parole commission. That can also disrupt the process and get them to postpone the hearing. So they suggest that we should gather peacefully, and we will definitely try to do this, at federal buildings, which we got plenty of here in New York, or sacred sites, to hold pre-parole vigils, prayer vigils, candlelight vigils, or any other form of lawful support for Leonard. Please, no violence. This will affect badly on Leonard and could result in your arrest. On the morning of the parole hearing, June 10th, Leonard's spiritual advisor and my dear friend, Lenny Foster, will lead a worldwide day of prayer with the sunrise ceremony. And there will be more details on that to come as the day gets closer. And we are still encouraging everybody to contact their state representatives or the Committee of the Judiciary about the lockdowns and denial of medical care. Then they tell you that's not my district. However, the United States is their district. Congress is charged with providing oversight to the BOP. They're up on jerichony.org and also on thejerichomovement.com. There is the phone number to call the Judiciary Committee, which is 202-225-6906. And there's also an online, you know, contact form that you can fill out. So those are some things that people can do. And also, just so people know, that he's also suffering very severe medical issues. He's losing his eyesight, which they did finally get a doctor in to see him, who said, you know, this could be taken care of. But now, of course, BOP says, oh, that'll be in 8 to 10 months. So really, Leonard needs to go home to be with his family and community after 48 years. So in addition to the parole hearing, the ad hoc committee is raising funds for expenses, trying to get independent medical experts, accommodations, travel, materials, and so on and so forth. So they have a GoFundMe going. And they are always thankful to you, Sister Betty, and to Ralph, because you dedicated his memorial to Leonard and Lumia. And they really appreciate that. That was a huge help. So that GoFundMe link is also on both those websites, and I'm sure it's on freeleonardpeltier.org as well. Please, any donation is accepted. No donation is too small. And, of course, no donation is too large. And I agree with what everybody said about everything that has already been said. We need to be united, and we need to, you know, fight this beast together, because if we don't, we're not going to win. You know, we need to, you know, make one nice mighty fist and fight back. And, you know, as we see, genocide here, genocide there. We could go on and on about, you know, Native people and the genocide against them, part of the founding of this country, in addition to, you know, the transatlantic slave trade and, you know, the Black Holocaust of the Middle Passage and afterwards. So, you know, we know what the history is. So we're not surprised. We're just disgusted. I am totally disgusted and enraged. And I will not stop until all of my people come out of those damnable death camps, and including the new ones who will be going in. And we are happy to report, in case it hasn't already been reported, and it probably was, that our dear comrade and brother, Baronza Bowers, is finally home after 50 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. And there's also a GoFundMe for Baronza, you know, to help him on his journey now that he's with his family. He's asked people to, like, you know, give him time and space. So we're giving him time and space. But he is very happy to finally, you know, be out of their clutches and be able to spend some time with his family. So that's a positive note. So we need to push to do the same for Leonard, you know.
Thank
you. Almost the same amount of time.
No,
so
no problem. Freeze them all. Thank you, Ann. We got to move right along. we want to try and get everybody in. I see that Brother Henry's on the line. We're going to open his mic before we go to Brother Joel. Okay, and 7785, you're next. Okay, Brother Henry, go ahead, and then we go to 7785.
Thank you, Sister Betty, and to all our guests, and big ups to MOVE. They've been determined and consistent for decades now in fighting against injustice, and they have my admiration and respect. I want to share a brief excerpt from a book written in 2010 by the National Lawyers Guild, and the title of the book is The Policing of Political Speech, Constraints on Mass Dissent in the United States. And it begins by indicating that to know that the United States is undergoing a highly orchestrated curtailment of personal and political liberties, one need not look further than police treatment of protesters in the streets. And this is also relevant to the demonstrations around the country and around the world coming out against the genocidal practices in Palestine. Those who speak out against government policies increasingly face many of the same types of weaponry used by the United States government in its military operations. Demonstrations at national special security events and other mass assemblies of the last decade have met with widespread police actions, many of them in violation of the law, aimed at stopping dissent in its tracks. Offensive rather than defensive measures such as use of less lethal munitions on passive crowds, pre-event raids of homes and meetings, spaces of organizers, confiscation of journalists' cameras, video equipment, and recording images, unlawful containment of crowds and mass arrests without probable cause typify modern policing of protesters. Such aggressive actions violate fundamental free speech rights and undermine the concept of a democratic society. Police preparation for mass assemblies routinely involves infiltration and spying on activist groups, sometimes years in advance, including the use of agents provocateurs. Time and time again, millions of dollars have been obtained by police departments for personnel and equipment at large events, justified by confidential informant testimony that large numbers of anarchists are planning to attend and engage in violence. Close examination of the facts often reveals the falsity of such allegations. Numerous police informants, many with criminal backgrounds, admit when later questioned that activist groups they infiltrated never planned any violent activities. Indeed, millions more have been spent paying damages to the demonstrators victimized by these tactics. And it's important to keep this in mind that a lot of these demonstrations are used as excuses to repress and imprison people who fight against injustice. And it's important for us to realize that the police themselves engage in illegal activities and make and blame the demonstrators who have a right to protest for the problems that they have created.
Thank you.
I'll leave
Thank you.
There.
Thank you. No, this is the background in which we are moving. And the end game for this type of creeping fascism and racism is Gaza, the murder, the outright murder of these news reporters. You can see them training their AI weapons on these brave warriors of the press. And if you don't think they're going to try and kill Assange when they bring him here, and I'm hoping they won't, then you have not understood this program. Without further ado, 7785, thank you for hanging in there. And Professor Henry, that's what I have to call you because you always bring a quotable text to us. Thank you for once again coming through and educating us. Okay, 7785, your mic is open. And Joel, get ready,
yes.
Please. Go ahead.
Yes, good. Good evening, everybody. Always such important and necessary information coming out. I don't want to take up much time, but I would just want to really emphasize, let people know that what Sister Ann was speaking about you know, our dear brother, comrade, Leonard Peltier, you know, who's going to the Pro Board in less than a month. I mean, this is a real opportunity that he may be able to actually be released after all this time and because of medical conditions especially. But all the information she gave us about, you know, that there shouldn't be a demonstration at the prison and so forth, we should take that very seriously. But we should also take very, very seriously is the GoFundMe page for Leonard. I mean, whether we're talking about $2, $5, or $200, everyone should send a little bit of money at least, whatever you can afford at this moment, to Leonard. Likewise, to Ronza Bowers, who just got out, Brother Daoud, as we always knew him, mostly referred to him back behind those penitentiary walls for decades and decades, 50 years he spent there. His GoFundMe page also, I would seriously respectfully ask everyone to send some money. These comrades, both these comrades, need that right now, and that's something we can do, and it's not asking you to go on the streets and, you know, the cops or anything like that, but do this, help these comrades out, and like we always say, in ending, free them all.
Free them all, and thank you. We're going to take it home with Brother Joel. I want to thank everybody. You really hung in there with me. Tomorrow night we have Net for Freeman, the Black Alliance for Peace, and the reporters on Haiti. We've also got Simotap is going to be calling in on a horrendous anti-defamation attack by Netflix on the Black community. It is really horrendous, and we're asking people to shut Netflix down for their rebooting of Good Times. It's horrific. Just disgusting. So we're asking you to, if you have a Netflix account, shut it down. So without further ado, Brother Joel, I hear you. I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, and I hope everyone can hear me.
Yes, we can. Loud and clear.
Yeah, I just want to elaborate. It doesn't seem that the repression that's taken place, at least on the campuses and so on, has dampened the activities. In fact, this is a very long period of highly sustained activities. I think some of it actually exceeds in the numbers of people that have taken part in this, even at the height of the Vietnam War, that a lot of this is exceeding the numbers that have taken place then. And we know that was the beginning of the development of what Henry Kissinger admitted was the growth of a revolutionary situation inside the United States, right in the belly of the beast. And it seems that more and more forces are coming together now, and the government is afraid of its own shadow at this point. That the fact that they are purging the presidents of universities one after another, not for even siding with the Palestinians, but just for allowing protests to take place on the campuses, one after another. This is a mass purge. This probably equals the length and depth of what was happening during the McCarthy period.
Yeah.
And anyone that criticized anything about the government could be quickly called before congressional committees, dismissed from their jobs, and and have their lives ruined and so on. Many things have changed since then, but I think that there's a consciousness today among the current generation about the enslavement of one generation after another by this high finance corporate oligarchy that keeps going on and on and on, but the consciousness is growing very quickly, and that's why these demonstrations and protests have emerged out of the blue. And right now it appears that the arrests of the students are getting rougher, and there are more injuries in the arrests, and also there's the beginning of the mobilization of gangs. They call it counter demonstrations, but actually these are police-guided mob attacks on demonstrators that they don't want to admit are really by the police. And why is that? Because they are trying to inflict a certain amount of pain on people that are speaking out to deter others that are on the point of also emerging, and they know it. The country is exploding right now. If you look at the upcoming election, you can see that probably two of the most hated people in the country are the ones running for president. I think very few people that are voting for either one. They're voting against the other one. And the storm clouds are really growing of rebellion. This is only the beginning. And it hasn't rekindled the type of struggle that was led by the Black Panther Party in the 60s and so on, not inside the United States. But, of course, around the world, we see what's happening. That's why the Palestinians are under attack. It's part of a worldwide response to the growing coming together of forces that are that have the dynamic within them of burying this imperialist system once and for all. Now, we have to worry. Sometimes, you know, like words like imperialist or capitalist or even racist or even the word fascist sort of thrown around without thinking of what they really mean. You know, they become like sort of routine name-calling, and the real meaning gets dulled. So, oh, fascism, yeah, that was something in World War II. And we see now, though, that World War III has already broken out. We see three major war fronts taking place, one in the Ukraine and one in Taiwan. In other words, a two-front war against the Russia-China bloc that was created by work and peasant revolutions that overthrew capitalism and are still at great odds against the imperialists. And of course, with the greatest degree of fascist violence and something that's been called genocide even by the majority of the UN has...
we've got to leave it here because we don't have much time. We'd like to give the last word to the Africa family in terms of the way to go. You've been listening to Brother Joel. He's giving you an international analysis. Tomorrow night, we're going to continue this discussion on WBAI. If you text me when you're ready, if you have time to call in on the discussion, I'll do a Zoom link to the studio. Africa family, take us home.
All right, all right, now, on everybody.
Go ahead.
I'm going to thank you.
And,
go ahead.
All I want to say is follow John Africa's example and never stop, never give in to this system, because no matter how it appears, the power of righteousness will never betray you. Long live John Africa. Long live John Africa.
And
long
I want to remind you was saying about these gangs that allegedly are fighting the people who are standing up for justice. This is exactly how Hitler got his SS elite squad started. And don't be surprised if a lot of these people are not police out of uniform. That's a very important point that Brother Joel made. Look at your World War II movies on the Nazis. They are following the script. And see you next Tuesday. And please try to tune in on WBAI tomorrow. Let me know if you're on. Thank you, every last one of you, for last week. Thank you. And move, family. Keep it going. Keep it going. You can come back anytime. Good night, everybody. On the move.
On the move.